Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Ryan.
Thank you. Hey, everyone, can you hear me? Hi, my name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic. It's like a gay man with a microphone. I want to say thank you to Jane for having me here. Thank you so much. You know, I've known you for a long time, and I respect your sobriety, and this is an honor and a gift. You know, my son is he's counting days right now, and he's reading the Big Book for the first time today with his sponsor. So before I go anywhere, I want to just say to all of you, thank you for letting me stay, and thank you for allowing me to grow. Thank you for showing me that there is a lot of fun to this, because my children got to see me grow up, and they got to see me spend the last 10 years really enjoying life and enjoying them and taking things in stride as best as I could. And I could not have done any of that without Alcoholics Anonymous, without you, without my sponsors, without my sponsees, and most of all, without God. And I want to talk about that relationship because, you know, if you're new or you're counting days, I did not like the word God when I came in here, and I didn't like to walk in and see the shades, and it says God this and God that. I don't think any of us came in and said, like, I'm so glad that I'm having a drinking problem and we're going to talk about God. It just wasn't there, right? But if you do come in and you look at these shades, please look at the 12th step. Thank you. And read it over and over again, because the verbiage of it is incredible. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and this means what, right? If you do the first 11 steps with a sponsor, we're going to help manufacture for you a spiritual awakening, and that is what is sufficient to get better, to have a psychic change, so that you can go live in society and be happy. And I'm grateful for the two men in my life, my first sponsor, John V, and my sponsor now, Paul C, who whips me into shape and is my touchstone to God, not because he is God, but because when he and I speak together, we're just always looking for a spiritual solution, and I see you. Thank you. So mommy drank and daddy drank, right? I was born in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. We moved to Queens when I was 10 years old. I'm an Irish Catholic, so we were born to be in bad relationships, and we were born to drink. And that's what we did. So I want to thank you very much. No. There's a lot of abuse in my story. There's physical abuse, there's mental abuse, and there's sexual abuse. None of that made me an alcoholic, but it gave me reasons to hide and to look for a way out the way that I did. We grew up in a very chaotic household. But I want to say this, right? Because of the ninth step, there's a lot of forgiveness. I do not have any bad or ill will towards both my parents. They're both gone now. I got to make an amends to my dad. My mom she died before my son was born, but you know, they were two people who suffered immensely with this disease, but never found what I did. They were never given the opportunity that I was given. So I do have a lot of forgiveness for them, because if I went out and when I did my ninth step and I was seeking forgiveness and from God and from everyone, right? If I want it, I have to give it out, right? So I just want to say that there's no ill will towards them, because they did the best that they could in the moments that they were given, right? So like I said, mommy drank, daddy drank, but I always knew how to make a drink, because when I was little, like I used to have to make my mom a vodka martini, and every day, right? So my sister and I, I had to make the drink. We had to leave it at the dining room table, and we weren't allowed in the dining room until both my parents were ready to have us after the day. So when I was about 12 years old, I knew how to make drinks. Everything had just gotten to a point where, like, I don't even know, you know, I woke up, I faked that I was sick when I was 12 years old. My mother went to work. My father went to work. I pulled out the vodka. I made drinks. I am not the alcoholic who had a very aha moment when I drank the first time. I drank. I kept drinking. I got sick. I threw up. I passed out. I woke up. My mother and father, my mother was talking to my dad, and she's like, he must be really sick because he didn't even get up and have my drink ready. And I remember that vividly. And the next morning, they didn't even wake me up. You know, so I woke up that Friday morning, and I didn't know what a hangover was. I didn't know why I was so thirsty. But I'll tell you, I sat up, and I did not feel well. And I sat in my bed, and I remember just looking. And I didn't know when I was going to do it again, but I knew I was going to do it again. And about within the next month, at 12 and a half years old, I started drinking on a regular basis every weekend. And I found out that it really, really, I needed it. And I thank God for alcohol, because when I found, at that ripe age of 12 and a half, I needed something to get me out. You know, drugs are not a part of my story. I never thought, I just never thought, like, what's the use of drugs? I don't want to be present. I want to drink to pass out, because I don't want to be here. So I want to say this. In high school, like, I thought I perfected it. I started to have a really good time. And what I found out when I was making my amends is people were not having fun with me in high school already. You know, they weren't. And especially in college, the same thing. But I thought I was figuring it out, and it was good, and it was okay, you know? It would really alleviate the chatter that was in my head. And it wasn't just chatter. It was a constant thinking all the time, you know? We were not allowed to talk about our feelings in that house. You know, if you had a good day, you had a drink. If you had a bad day, you had a few drinks. But we're not going to sit. We're not going to talk about anything. We're just going to keep it moving. And I knew from an early age that I needed to get out of there. So I was getting into a lot of trouble in high school. And my mom and dad were like, listen, you know, in grammar school, they're like, you're going back to Brooklyn and you're going to go to high school there. And my father's like, and you're going to pay for it, so you'll learn your lesson for all this nonsense you're giving us. I'm like, absolutely, yeah, right. And, you know, all we did, right, we go and I found people that would accept me, not for who I am, but for my drinking. And those are the people I stayed with. And, you know, I went to high school with my cousin. I went to college with him, and it was wonderful. Thank you. And I apologize. And so we were now I had a couple of run-ins. I'm already starting to get in trouble in high school, but I have no problem with it. You have a problem with it, it's on you. I go to college, and college I thought was amazing, right? I found people that drank like I did. They were drinking exactly as I was in the beginning. What I did not realize is nobody, the seven guys that I live with or the eight girls that lived upstairs from me, nobody was thinking the way that I was thinking. And here's what happens, right? I graduate college. I got an internship because someone heard me tell a funny story. I get a job in finance. I graduate college, and I'm on a trading desk. And everything's great. Like, I'm getting paid now to drink. My first expense, we talk about, like, when we pad our expense accounts. The first one I handed in, my boss pulled me in, and he sat me down. He's like, and he puts the expense report in front of me. And I'll never forget this. He goes, you're not spending enough money. And this is verbatim what he said. I'm not going to use the word, but he goes, I don't give an S what you need to do. Take your friends out. You better bring in more receipts. And that's all I needed, because my ego now, right? I can take my friends out. I could spend money that's not mine. I'm going to show you how amazing I am, you know? And during this process, I'll rewind about some, because it's a big part of our story. I met a girl. I married her. I'm gay, so it really never worked out. We have two beautiful children, and that worked out. You know, I said, my son, my daughter's here tonight. Thank you for coming. And so here we go, right? So that's going on. So, like, I'm dating women, and I'm married, and I'm in Wall Street, and I'm really doing exactly what I thought I was supposed to do. I am really unhappy, but I'm looking at everybody. And from a small age, I'm looking at you, looking at me, and I know exactly what you're thinking. And I don't like you either. And I'm here to argue with you, and I'm going to argue with you before you get to argue with me, because I did not know this, but I was frightened of you. I'm scared of you. I don't want you to get to know me. I don't want you to see me. I'm a fraud, but I'm not going to let you know that. So we would go into things. Now I'm fighting with people, right? And I fought a lot in college, and I fought a lot in high school, and I didn't win all the time, and it wouldn't stop me. So now I'm in work, right? And I have this job, and it's a career, and it's starting to get a little bit too dark, and then September 11th happens, and the wheels came off. You know, how we say we kept lowering our standards. I couldn't lower the bar quick enough. Like everything that I deemed what I was not supposed to do happened in about a week. And on December 20th, 2001, I was like, I am never drinking again. And self-will availed me nothing, but at the time I thought it was everything and all that I needed. And I want to just say this to you, please. If you're here, Alcoholics Anonymous, we are a 12-step program. If you are not working the 12 steps, you are taking a vacation from drinking, and it's going to come up again, because none of us can get through this by ourselves. We need a God, we need steps, we need sponsorship, and we need each other. I'll stop pontificating on that. That's my experience with it. So I quit, and I was amazing that year. A lot of things came up. I felt better. I looked better. I told, Kathy, I'm like, I'm gay. And she's like, you're not gay. I'm like, I can't be gay. And then a year later, she's like, you're gay. I'm like, I know, So we leave it, and I don't want to make light of it because it was harder than that, but it's that's really just the cut and dry of that. So thank you very much. So I'm going through this process and I get to about a year and I tell myself, I'm going to book a trip to London because I need to drink again. And I'm making this choice. I'm making this decision on my own. Like, I'm going to drink again. So I go to London. I go see clients. I tack on an extra few days. And here's what happens. I don't remember. This is where my blackouts were taking me at this point. I hadn't blacked out in a year because I'm not drinking. I go. I don't remember when I started drinking. I woke up in a different hotel room in the same hotel. I woke up about 18, 19 hours after whatever. I don't know. But I do know this. I have a little bit of a black eye coming on. My knuckles are cut up. I don't remember what I've done. I don't remember anything. I get all my stuff together, and I'm like, I was supposed to stay for another day, but I'm like, I can't even stay here. I got to go. So I go to the airport. I charge my company a lot of money to get me back home in that moment. I land. I don't tell anyone what I did, and I am totally fine. No one's going to know it. No one's going to know a thing. I got to about another year. I went to California. I woke up in Nevada. 3 hours before a business meeting, and I'm like, I'm a wreck, right? I'm a mess, and this is after like a year of like, I'm like, what is wrong, So here's my story of that. It goes about a year, 9 months, 9 months, 9 months, 9 months, 6 months, and I am really good at quitting. And I'm gonna tell you, like, I really did believe every time that I quit, I was going to do this on my own, and every time I picked up, I knew that I was going to do this, and it was going to be okay this time. So it's the summer now of 2009. And my company, we were doing our offices over, and we were working from home. And I worked nights. So I don't remember when it started, but it's probably about April, where like my mind is really going. And I'm working from home by myself with myself. And I can't stop this thing. It's going really, really hard. And I don't blame any psychiatrist. I went in, I'm like, I'm having really bad thoughts. I'm having ideological thoughts of killing myself. They're like, do you drink? I'm like, no, I'm like, I don't. And I wasn't lying at the time. So they gave me a fistful of things, and I go home and I leave there and I'm taking everything and nothing's working. So I go out one night to get gas in my car, and I'm at the mobile station. I turn around and there's a big Corona sign in the window. And I went in, I bought a 12-pack and a pack of cigarettes, and I went home. And I drank 11 beers, and I was horrified that I couldn't believe that I drank 11 that quickly. The logic is this. I didn't want to drink the whole 12-pack, so I walked back and got another 12-pack. Two more packs of cigarettes, came home. But here's what it is, right? I wake up the next morning, and I peed in my pants again. And I'm about a half hour late for work, to check in with work and everything. And that's where I am. And I don't know what happened after that, but I started drinking more and more on a regular basis that summer. And it got really, really dark and really, really scary with moments of like, you're amazing. Look at you. It's three o'clock in the morning, you're at work, and you're drinking an Amstel Light out of this nice glass. And then I would black out, and I wouldn't really know what's going on. But what happened is this, I had two things that happened to me in my life that were... My son and my daughter, they were little, and they thought I was amazing. And I started to lie because I couldn't be with them. I didn't want to be with them. I called their mother and be like, I can't come down and get them today. I'm busy. I got called into the city with work because I wanted to sit home and drink by myself. And then that would really weigh on me. And so what I did was, I put all my paperwork in order. I called the insurance company. I'm like, what would preclude my children or anyone from my beneficiary from getting my insurance money? And like, only suicide. I'm like, okay. So I lived on the beach at the time, and I put my paperwork in order, and I knew what I was going to do. I would think about it a lot, but I was so afraid to do it. So what I did is on October 6, 2009, thank you, October 6, 2009, is a nor'easter coming. I'd gone out in September. I'd bought these planks of wood because there was a telephone pole near my house. I guess parents or whoever died there, people would leave wreaths and teddy bears and stuff there. So I knew someone crashed into that pole. So what I did is on the morning of October 6, 2009, I walked outside at 6:30 in the morning around then, and I set up the planks of wood because I'm going to drive into it later on that day. I was going to start drinking. I'd gone to the store. I got everything I needed, and I'm going to drink enough so I have enough courage to go through this thing. And I don't know what happened. I started drinking a lot. And it was like really, really bad. I have a snapshot of myself in the car, crying my eyes out. And then I woke up the next day. And I woke up and I was stuck to my rug because I'd thrown up all over myself. And I'd peed on myself. And I'm laying on the rug and I'm looking around the room. And when I woke up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, this is a wreck. And I remember thinking like, regular people don't do this, you know? And then it came to me, and I'm like, I'm going to quit again. And I got up with the great resolve that I always had, and I jumped up, really hungover, cleaned up the house, and everything was fine again because I'm pretending nothing happened. And a buddy of mine who I've done a couple of endurance races with called me from California. And I don't know, this is like, I've had a lot of moments where God has intervened, but I didn't know it was God at the time, right? And my buddy Steve calls, and he's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, Steve, I'm like, I can't stop drinking. He's like, but you don't drink. I'm like, I know, but when I start, I can't stop. And he's like, would you go to AA? And I'm like, no. I'm like, it really ruined my Uncle Artie, and I'm not going near AA. And he was like, I'm like, because my Uncle Artie went to AA, and everyone hated Uncle Artie in high school after that. Like, all my aunts, uncles, it was like, you don't go near Artie anymore. You know, I'm like, so I was like, I'm not doing that, you know? So he's like, I'm an AA. I was like, oh, God. I'm like, good for you. I'm like, that's great, you know? I'm like, I love it. And he knew me really well, right? Because what he does is he tells me, like, he's like, you know, this is before we had like the iPhones we have now, right? And he's like, listen, he's like, go to 5 meetings, and this is what you do. You go in. If the meeting's at 7 p.m., go in at 6:55. Don't sit in the front. Don't sit in the back. Sit in the middle. When you go in, just sit down, take out your phone, and pretend you're texting someone. You can text me and tell me you're there. I ain't going to text him, but I went, right? And I'm going to tell you an experience of my first AA meeting. I walk in. And I don't like anybody. I don't like the way you look. I don't like anything about you. I don't believe you. I think it's nonsense. It's a beginner's meeting. I thought you were going to teach me how to drink better. And this guy gets called on. And his name is Jed. And Jed stands up and he's like, my name is Jed and I'm an alcoholic. And I stand up for AA because my sponsor told me if I don't stand up for AA, I'll fall for anything. And I looked at Jed and I was like, I hate you. I hate your sponsor. I hate everything about you. You are an idiot, and I'm embarrassed for you. And that's how I felt about Jed. And that was my first meeting. So it took me a while before I went back to my second one. And my friend Steve is calling me in the end time, and I ain't answering because I know what he's going to tell me what to do. I do not want to come to this place, right? So a couple of weeks go by. I'm not one of these people who came in loving AA, you know? So my friend, a couple of weeks come by, and I went to the Mustard Seed. And I had like maybe three meetings in at this point. And it's a Saturday, right? And this old crusty guy is standing there. And I walk in and he's like, is anyone new at Counting Days? And I'm like, I don't say. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like, I think I have about like maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not really sure. And this guy turns around and he's like, you might want to do a 90, kid. What do you mean you don't know? And I was like, oh, you think so, old guy? I'm like, 90 and 90? I'm like, that's ridiculous. Now, I don't know what a 90 and 90 is, but I'm going to fight him, right? So we're going to go, right? And what happens is I find out during this meeting what a 90 and 90 is. And I'm like, nah, I'm like, that's for losers, right? So I leave and I go home and I'm thinking about this guy. And now when I was counting days, they said things like this. After 90 days and of putting a dollar in the basket, why don't you go back and we'll refund you for your misery? So I get like 3 days after I meet the salty dog. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get 90 days. I'm going to ask him for his $90. I'm going to light it up in front of him and walk out. So I did my 90 and 90 to spite some old man who actually saved my life. And I went back to the Mustard Seed trying to find him. And I never found the guy. And that's one of the beautiful things we do in AA. If just by showing up, we do not know what we're going to say that could help somebody or change the perception of someone. And that's why it's one of the 1,000 million reasons why I love our fellowship. So I found my first home group by trying to spite this guy at the Mustard Seed. And I was going to a meeting every day. And they're talking about sponsorship and they're doing all these things. I'm like, no, I'm not getting that, you know? And there was a beginner series. And I'll never forget this. And I hated, there was one guy who I was really friends with. We sat opposite each other. We didn't acknowledge anybody in the room. And we would just like grunt at each other. And his name is Damon. And he had about 30 days more than I did. And I want to say this, right? Because I love that guy. He's not here anymore. He didn't make it. So I see it. Thank you. So I'm sorry. I acknowledge that. Sorry. So I'm like going through the process. I found my first sponsor, right? And during this beginner series, I took a chair. When they asked me to share, I said, no, thank you, no, thank you, three or four times. I took the chair, and I threw it against the wall. I'm like, screw you and screw everybody. You want me to tell Cher? I think you're all a bunch of idiots and a bunch of losers. And I walked out, and someone goes, keep coming back. I was like, and I'm like, and I came back the next day, and I wanted to fight. I wanted to argue with everyone. And you know, I came back the next morning, and no one gave me a hard time. No one looked at me cross. No one even mentioned what I did the day before. And that's when I realized, okay, maybe there is something to this where maybe some of these people are okay. And I found my first sponsor, John V. He was over at Saturday Beginners. And he held up the book. And he's like this little punk from Queens, you know. And he's like, and verbatim, he said, if you want to get happy, you better find someone who knows the first 164 pages of this book. And maybe you too will have a shot at happiness the way that I've been given. And for some reason, I asked him to be my sponsor. And he sat me down and he looked at me and he's like, listen, I'm going to ask you to do things that were not asked, the same things that were just asked of me. And he's like, but I'm going to say something to you. You are very sick. You have children and you're responsible for them. He's like, so here's how it works. When people go into Sloan Kettering and they have cancer, the doctor doesn't say, look, we've narrowed the cancer. We know what it is and we know how to cure it. But we're going to wait a year. He said, we get to work right away. And then he said, and what happens with chemotherapy when it's working? The doctors don't say, this is working really well. Let's take a break. They said, we're going to see through the end. And for some reason, I listened to him. And I had to make amends. I did a fourth and fifth step. And on February 12th, I'll say this, on February 23rd, 2010, I had a real relationship with another human being for the first time. Because I sat down with my sponsor and I told him the good, the bad, and the ugly. And he didn't look at me cross. He didn't think I was any, you know, I thought it was so much and so big because I have a deep, huge emotional attachment to all of my problems, but he doesn't. And he called me out for what I was and what I was not. And he said to me, okay, now we're going to make your list and you go do your thing. And he had me start in California and I go from all the hotel rooms that I wrecked, make my way back and go to, and make my amends to everybody. I wasn't allowed to make living amends until after I had made them. The only one I did not do, I did not sit down with my children and tell them everything that I had done, until now. So here's what I just want to leave it at is this. You know, the thing that's got me through the last year is this. And I love this. It's page 20, right? I touched on it, okay. And it's this. It's the constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. That has got me through everything over the last year. My kid's mom is sick. She's dying. There's money involved. Her brothers got involved. They've done things to my children that were just not right. They kicked them out of their own house that I've been paying for, and I have all this deep-rooted resentment. But you want to know something? I am okay. I have a God in my life. I have a sponsor. I have these men, my sponsees, who call me at the wrong time, but it's always the right time, you know? The beauty of it all is this. I'm not attached to one thought or feeling anymore. I can experience a whole bunch of different things. I came into AA ashamed of being gay. I have a boyfriend now who I love. He's the sweetest thing in the world. His parents are over here from Ireland. We sat down today, and this is a plug to do the work because the 10-step promises are what they're my... We talk about all the promises, and we go into the 9-step promises. My favorite one of the 10-step promises because I can go anywhere. I can do anything. I'm not a slave to it, but I'm not cocky about it. The problem has been removed. And I sat down today with his mother, his father, and his sister. Thank you. And we had a nice, long 3-hour lunch, and I watched him, and it was beautiful. I am present in my life today. I have real relationship in my life today. And more importantly is this, I am able to sit with myself. You people have given me something that I always wanted that I never had. You gave me dignity. I always wanted it, but I didn't know that I was missing it until you showed me what it was. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Paul. I love my sponsees. I love my kids. Thank you for having me the last 10 years. Thank you.